Thank you. Assalamu alaikum, good afternoon. Thank you, Ashraf Saab and IPR and Umayyad Saab for this invitation, as always. I was the one who suggested to Ashraf Saab that we should keep our initial comments brief so that we could have a discussion. So I'm going to try my best to stick to that myself. The India-Pakistan crisis, I will acknowledge up front that I'm captive to my research. Ashraf Saab mentions the book. I spent 7 years looking at India-Pakistan crises from Kargil down to Uri, which was 2016. And I'm thanking my stars this didn't happen before my book came out, otherwise I would have had to write another chapter. But based on that work, I want to make 5 points, and I'll leave it at that, and we can have a, if there are questions, we can definitely come back to it. Number one, the crisis was no surprise. If you added the state of the India-Pakistan relationship and the conditions in Indian Kashmir, the idea that things would remain normal, I think would be the real surprise here, especially in the run-up to the Indian elections and what was happening. But the important conclusion I draw from everything we know so far, and we'll know more as time goes by, and this is something to keep in mind for the next crisis, is that whatever you do in a particular crisis is going to influence what you can or cannot do in the next crisis. And my analysis of Pulwama so far is that the Uri crisis of 2016 played heavily on the minds of India and in turn Pakistan. If you look at the choice of target by India, the only logic to that is that the Indian Prime Minister had claimed for his domestic audience that after whatever happened at Uri, the surgical strikes, and it's contested of course, now terrorism will be deterred forever. And so if he repeated what he had done 2 years ago, domestically that would not hold in terms of making the argument that they've done something more. And so the selection of the target really was not about causing the kind of casualties India claimed, because it was a fairly barren target at the end of the day. It was really about signaling that Kashmir was crossed and quote-unquote Pakistan proper was attacked. The other thing I think that drove this decision was the interpretation of what India heard from its Western interlocutors. And as far as I can tell so far, this is the first time the message from the Western interlocutors was not only about de-escalation. So far, every single crisis, the message to India and Pakistan has been de-escalate first and we'll worry about the rest later, because of the nuclear element and all the worry. This time, actually, the message, interestingly, was that we understand if India has to respond. And this was somewhat what it started in Uri, but this time I think it was clearer, with the message that we do not want any escalation. And I think India's interpretation of that was a more emboldened stance by looking at a situation where they thought they could do this, and then there would be international pressure on Pakistan to pull back. And thus you have the strike. On the Pakistani side as well, I think there was a question of no response for the second time running. Because after Uri, whatever the strike was, Pakistan basically didn't do anything. And the question of precedent would have been crucial. Pakistan, as you know, has always talked about a low pain threshold when it comes to anything that India does. And so if Balakot is not the threshold, if Indian claim of 350 casualties is not the threshold, then what is the threshold? This would have been one conversation in the minds of the policymakers. The other one, and I can reveal this because I've also written this in my recent article in Dawn, there was also this concern of whether the world is ganging up against Pakistan in the crisis. And this was a pure coincidence, but there was a 2-3 day period before the Indian strike where the Pakistani civilian sort of, I won't say leadership, but interlocutors were unable to reach their American counterparts. And there was some confusion there on why that was happening. And as it happens, there was a strike before the conversation happened, and some conclusion may have been drawn that this suggests that there's a gang up. And if Pakistan doesn't respond, India may do something else. So I think the combination here, people are looking at Pulwama as an isolated incident. Actually, if you go back to Uri, I think it's much easier to explain what may have happened. So the first conclusion I want to put on the table, and this is my conclusion in my book for the crises for the past 20 years. Whatever you do in a crisis is going to influence what you can do next time. The second conclusion I want to put on the table, I've already mentioned, but I want to crystallize, is that what you've seen here is a paradigm shift in the way powerful countries approach an India-Pakistan crisis. It's risky business, but for the first time, this was not only about de-escalation. And let me also say that I don't think there was any major country in the world that responded differently. And I will leave it at that. So there's a question mark for the next crisis on how the world would respond if something else happens. Third, I don't think this crisis is over. And maybe, Ashraf Sahib, you were suggesting that I was going to say this, so I'll say it. I don't think the crisis is over. I think the blip is gone. But consider the following. The situation in Indian Kashmir is as bad as it has gotten for decades. And I do not see any available tools with the Indian government, realistically, where they will change this between now and the May elections. Second, if you are a terrorist organization, there is no better moment to strike again and cause a major India-Pakistan crisis than now. You know, the world talks about Pakistan-based organizations. We can talk about those. But I would also point to two other factors here that are not being discussed. If you are ISIS or Al-Qaeda, tell me what a better moment for you is. You've been spending time in the last year and a half in Afghanistan making marginal difference to the violence there. This is your opportunity. If you are internally within Indian Kashmir able to do something given the level of anger, this is your opportunity. And I'm so, not to sound ominous, but just analytically putting a point there, that between now and May, if anybody is going to let their guard down, I think it would be a huge mistake. I think the blip is gone, but I do think there is a greater possibility of the crisis reigniting than not between now and the Indian elections. Leading from that, my fourth conclusion is that the next crisis is going to be more difficult to manage than this one. If you have another problem in Indian Kashmir, another spark in Indian Kashmir, Prime Minister Modi will be completely boxed in. He's not doing well domestically, politically. He wasn't before the crisis. This last fortnight has not been good for him. The way this has ended is not good domestically for him at all, especially with the pilot being captured and released. And the default for India will be to blame Pakistan the moment something happens. This combination is deadly. And if I may add to this one other factor, one other sort of king, which I don't think anybody is talking about, but the puzzle for me in this entire crisis was, why did Jaish-e-Mohammed claim responsibility? I could understand an attack and I could understand something happened, whether indigenous or whatever. But why did they go out of their way to formally claim responsibility? And I don't have any inside information, so I can't say. But just as pure analysis of the militancy space, my conclusion to this is that actually this is the first time Jaish has directly poked the Pakistani state in the eye. And I think the claim of the responsibility tells me that they are sending a signal not only to India on what happened or whatever could happen, but also to the Pakistani state, that if you are not interested in real jihad, then we can embarrass you and put you in the dock. We have enough capability. Because from their point of view, again, this is the moment. Indian Kashmir is boiling and you want to create a spark if you are a real organization that believes that that's the way to go. If that's true, you could end up in the next crisis where Pakistan is blamed by India and globally. And Pakistan actually has also been poked in the eye even harder by any organization that may be around, whether it's a Pakistan-based organization or not. And I'm not arguing here whether this one was done by X or Y or how or whatever. That's a separate question. But for the next crisis, it could become much more complicated to figure out how to play it if this, if the way this crisis got triggered repeats itself. Final conclusion is the big picture. And I think this is where Pakistan has the real problem. Mahir Saab talked about one aspect of that problem, which is economy. But even in this space, I think I want to put this on the table, and I was in the US throughout this crisis and just got back 2 days ago, which was great, because I think if you were sitting in India and Pakistan, it was impossible to pull back and see what really was happening. But from a distance, I want to put out two things. And this is something for us to think about here in Pakistan. First, there is no taker for Pakistan's view on militancy any longer. The argument that the world now is making, and I was told this point blank in Washington, is no longer whether the attack was indigenous, whether the person was from Indian Kashmir or Timbuktu, or how they got the explosive or who did the attack. The only point the world is now making is the leadership is in your country, and if it is, we will blame you. That may be fair, that may be unfair, that may be right, that may be wrong. I'm not debating that question. What I'm telling you is that the conversation has shifted in a way that Pakistan has a problem of selling its viewpoint. Whether it's the correct or the wrong viewpoint, I'm not debating. So in the long run, you know, when I did my book, the smartest Indians told me something that I've never forgotten. And this is a conclusion that I report in my book. India has done best in every crisis in which they have basically done nothing. Because what they do is, for the next 10 years, diplomatically go and beat up Pakistan on the head. And the Mumbai crisis is the best example of that. Didn't do anything. For 10 years, they keep going and saying, these people don't even end the legal cases. Forget about anything else. So in some ways, I think Prime Minister Modi has done Pakistan a favor by doing what he did. And the second part of this is that the argument of Indian Kashmir, the oppression in Indian Kashmir, the atrocities in Indian Kashmir, again, unfortunately, from a human rights perspective I speak, there are no takers for it. So again, we can debate fair, unfair, right, wrong, whatever it is. The point I'm making to you is that in the big picture, if you add two data points, which is 10, 20 years down the line, the economic differential that Mahir Saab spoke about, and the idea that actually Pakistan's narrative is not being bought. I want to repeat, I'm not debating whether it's the right or wrong narrative. In the big picture, there is a serious problem. And we need to look at that. Let me just end by saying that between now and May, to me, is still crunch time. And I would suggest three things that we need to look at. Number one, India-Pakistan back channel of some sort, whether through the US or whatever, or China, at least to share any piece of information or intelligence that can prevent another crisis trigger. Second, I know this will not happen, but if I were advising, I would argue that India needs to make certain concessions in Kashmir now, at least to lower the temperature between now and May. And finally, this did not happen this time. This is the first time it did not happen. The world, which I essentially put US, China, Russia, the key players, need to come together now to agree on how to manage the next India-Pakistan crisis. This is the first crisis that the world was very distracted and disjointed. In the long run, of course, this final point I will convert to say, unless India and Pakistan can come up with dependable bilateral escalation control mechanisms, the world will always be there and look after its own interests, not yours. Let me stop there.